For more talks and meditations, go to GloriaKGreen.com. Staying on course, changing unproductive habitual tendencies. So I begin with a poem called "There's a Hole in My Sidewalk, The Romance of Self-Discovery" by Portia Nelson. I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I am lost. I am helpless. It isn't my fault. It takes forever to find a way out. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place, but it isn't my fault. It still takes me a long time to get out. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it is there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault. I get out immediately. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. I walk down another street. That's kind of the course that we're taking as we're trying to navigate ourselves towards our North Star. We often don't see the obstacles, or maybe we know the obstacles are there, but we still allow them to trip us up. And we create these habits that we keep doing, even though we know the habits aren't working for us. So we've set our North Star, the direction or the compass for our life. And so we know where it is we want to go. And we want to go there regardless of what obstacles are in our way or what outside circumstances might change. And we've mapped a route, but because outside circumstances can change and obstacles are going to arise, it can't be real rigid. But we talked about using right thinking and or skillful thinking and skillful effort to increase the likelihood that we're going to stay on that path to our North Star, or at least not veer off too much. The route ensures that you don't keep walking down the same street and falling into the same hole. We begin to see that. We see that the obstacles are like knots that kind of tie us up. Sometimes we feel a craving so strongly that we just have to have that chocolate chip cookie, even though that chocolate chip cookie isn't going to help us at all. And as a matter of fact, it may be somewhat harmful, because maybe we'll have the next cookie and the next one and the next one. And so not only does it veer us off our path, but it also is not very healthy for us. And then we start believing that chocolate chip cookies make us feel better. And so we start reaching for chocolate chip cookies. And then the first one or the second one haven't made you feel better. So you need the third and the fourth and the fifth, whether it's a cookie or a drink or shopping or whatever it might be. So we need to find a way around these obstacles or help ourselves get through these obstacles. And the one we'll be focused on mostly today is desire and craving, because that's a lot of where our habits come from, our desires and cravings. As you remember last time, we talked about aversion and anger, and we talked about restlessness and worry, sloth and torpor, doubt and delusion as the obstacles we have to figure our way around. And delusion we'll be talking about with each one, because delusion or ignorance is the cause of craving, of aversion, of restlessness, of sloth and torpor. So once you've defined your North Star and kind of mapped your route, you see your obstacles, you really need a way to stay on course. How many times in our check-in do we hear, I dropped off my meditation practice, but I'm getting back on? Because that's how life works. When a pilot is flying a plane, he doesn't fly in a straight line from A to B. He veers here and there, depending on the wind and whatever else. He knows where he is, he knows where he's going, but he knows he can't get there straight. It's like in a sailboat. I would want to just sail a straight line. Luckily, my husband knows how to sail. And we don't sail in a straight line because we'd never get there. So you have to know where you're going, but you have to be ready to take these little detours that are going to happen. And the strategy to stay, one strategy that we're looking at today to stay on course is to look at your unproductive habitual tendencies. So what do I mean by that? We have these tendencies that we automatically go to when something upsets us. You know, we reach for the chocolate chip cookie, or we start scrolling on the internet to distract ourselves, or we start reading a book and another book and another book, or we do all of these things because we think it's going to work. Because one time, maybe the first time we did it when we were 8 years old, it did work. Or it works for a moment. And that's all we're thinking about, is the very moment. You know, when you eat the chocolate chip cookie, boy, it tastes so good. But we don't think about the whole bigger picture of how that fits in and whether it's really doing what we want it to do. All we think about is it tastes really good. So it takes some skillful effort to change these unproductive habits, but it's not so much about the skill. We can't just use grit to get rid of these bad habits that we've been wanting to change. Sometimes you can, but most often grit isn't enough to change the habit. It's less about grit and more about how your brain's reward system works. Our responses to our obstacles are habitual. We jump on that hamster wheel of reactivity really quickly. Because in our mind, we say, when this happens, I do this, and we don't stop to think about it. We just react. We don't stop and take that pause that Viktor Frankl talks about. But in reality, if we do that, we find that most of the time our reactions are not that skillful. And a lot of the time, our reactions get us in more trouble and they don't give us what we really thought we would be getting. So we don't see things clearly. And so then we say or we do things that we regret. It takes effort to stop and to look at the stories our mind's making up. When someone presses our trigger, our mind automatically generates a story. And if we don't stop and look at that story, and we've talked about stories, how we need to tease the facts out from the story itself, we go with the story and we feel justified in getting angry, and we feel self-righteous, and boy, feeling self-righteous in the moment feels so good. But it really makes us do things that we regret later in most cases. So, and then we don't see the beliefs under those stories, and those beliefs hold us hostage. They keep us from being who we want to be, being our authentic self. So if we don't stop, the worst thing is that we don't see that we are strengthening the neural pathway of that habitual tendency. Because we're doing it over and over and over. And every time we do it, it gets stronger and we're more likely to do it. And so we really need to look at our responses and make sure they're not just habitual, automatic reactions that we take. And if we want to change those habitual automatic reactions, we need to change the habits. And the book that I found most helpful was by Judson Brewer. The book is called Unwinding Anxiety. And he talks about the three gears of habit: mapping your mind, updating your brain's reward center, and finding the bigger, better offer. The mapping your mind is the first gear. It becomes aware of your habitual tendencies. The more you meditate, the more you slow yourself down, the more you start seeing, oh, I automatically do this, or I automatically do that. I was holding my newest grandson yesterday, and as soon as he started crying, I felt my whole body tense up. Well, how is that going to help him start crying? But you have these habitual tendencies, and if you can see them, oh yeah, relax, you know, and what's going to relax me so that I can relax him? And then he fell asleep. So it works. So you've got to look at your habitual tendencies and become aware of them and become aware of how you're using them. And in mapping your mind, you have to look at that all habits have three components. They have a trigger, they have a behavior, and they have a result. And the trigger is something that you often don't have control over. You may be able to change your relationship to a trigger, but you can't control whether it happens or not. The behavior is what you do, and the result is what you get. And a lot of times we think we're getting reward, but if we stop and look closely, we'll find that we're actually getting a punishment that is actually not very good. So we can't always avoid triggers, but we can change our relationship to them. But the most important part is the reward. The strength of the reward really determines the strength of the habit. The stronger you believe in the reward, the harder it's going to be to change that habit. So with the trigger, you're just asking yourself, why am I doing this? What triggered this behavior? So when you find yourself jumping in and doing something automatically, something that you've wanted to stop doing, whether it's chewing your fingernails or eating your chocolate chip cookies or snapping at someone, whatever it is, what triggered this? Because if you can't see the trigger, then you're going to get caught up in it again and again. But if you know what the trigger is and you can recognize the trigger, that's your bell of mindfulness to stop and take a look at what's happening. So one habit a lot of us would like to get rid of is getting triggered. We have unresolved pain from our past, and somebody pushes our button and it activates that pain. And it happens especially when we go back to where the pain was experienced or the people we were with when that pain happened. You know, you go back to your parents' house and you feel like you're a teenager again. Or maybe you feel even like a 7-year-old who's got no voice. It's real easy to fall back into our immature states and into the patterns we used to use. And so if we want to change, we have to be prepared. And one of the ways we can prepare ourselves is by quit being surprised by the unsurprising. Quit being surprised by the unsurprising. Quit being surprised by those triggers. There's no reason for you to be, people have pushed that button on you hundreds of times. So why are you surprised that it's getting pressed 101 times? Vienna Ferrison says, for instance, we may be like, wait, this person who's always behaved this way is acting this way again? No way. We have to stop being surprised by what we know about people. We hope that people are going to be different. And we hope that they will be different than we know that they are. They press our button because they're acting the way they always did, and we want them to be different. And so we get surprised when they're acting the way we know they always act. Or we get surprised that they don't acknowledge you when you know they can't. They've never been able to acknowledge you, to really be present for you. Or you get surprised when you think someone's going to show up differently, when you know they've never showed up differently before. Why would they do it now? And that presses our button. And then we're operating out of our amygdala, and our prefrontal cortex is shutting down. So we can become free if we can change our relationship with our triggers. We can say, I'm going to stop looking for you to do that. I'm not going to ask my husband to give me something that maybe he's never given me before, because maybe that's just not part of him. And I'm going to give it to myself or find it elsewhere. I'm not going to, you know, ask my kids to call me up every day, because I know that's just not possible in their lives today. So we've got to keep looking and saying, I'm going to stop looking for someone to do something that would make me feel good, but that I know they don't have the capacity or the time or the energy or even the desire to do. And when we admit that they're not the person or the parent or the friend that we'd like them to be in this moment, doesn't mean that we don't love them, that we don't care for them. Doesn't mean that we don't want to continue the relationship with them. It just means they can't be everything we want them to be. And we just have to accept that. And once we accept that, that trigger, that button, kind of quits working. Or at least it doesn't have so much power over us. So the trigger, changing our relationship, is very important in changing our habitual tendencies. But what's the most important is the reward. What reward am I really getting from this? Do I really want to keep doing this? Your brain chooses what to lay down as a habit and what not to do again. And this is all based on how rewarding the behavior is. The more rewarding the behavior, the stronger the habit. So the more you feel rewarded by meditating, the stronger your meditation habit's going to be. Judson Brewer says the reward value has been mapped to a certain part of the brain called the orbitofrontal cortex, the OFC. The OFC takes all of this information, groups it together, and uses it to set that composite reward value of a behavior so we can quickly retrieve it in the future as a chunked bit of information. So rather than stopping to say, if I do this, is it going to be good? Is it going to give me pleasure, or is it going to give me pain? Our orbital frontal cortex says, oh, I've seen this before, and this is the reward that was attached to it. And we automatically think that's what's going to happen. So to change the habit, you can't just focus on not doing the behavior through sheer grit. You can't avoid the trigger. You could change your relationship with the trigger, but you have to look at the actual result. Are you really getting a reward from that behavior? Are you getting some kind of a punishment? Something negative happening? And that's really important, because sometimes the reward we think we're getting is just a tiny piece of the picture. The reward we're getting from that chocolate chip cookie is just the flavor that's in our mouth for 10 seconds, you know, less than 5 minutes, let's say, to eat a cookie. That's a little tiny sliver of our whole picture. You know, another sliver of the picture is getting on the scale the next morning. And another is feeling unhealthy because we've been eating too much junk food. So we need to pay attention to that, because we don't want to act insane. We don't want to do the same thing over and over and expect different results or expect better results. And we do that a lot. So what we need to do is update our rewards, our brain's reward value. So I think I've talked in the past about my Diet Pepsi habit, but not everybody's heard it. I was really trying to quit drinking Diet Pepsi for years, and I could quit over Lent, but boy, Easter Sunday came and I was having my Diet Pepsi. And, you know, I could do it in sheer grit for short periods of time, but it always came back. And so I decided to pay attention to Judson Brewer's advice and really try that with my Diet Pepsi habit. And so I only drank Diet Pepsi at lunchtime. I only allowed myself one a day. If I would have allowed it in the morning or more than one a day, I probably would have been drinking Diet Pepsi 24/7. So I had that much grit. So the behavior was just drinking a Diet Pepsi. And the reward I thought I was getting was feeling comforted and connected, which is an odd thing to think, but I grew up in a big family and the big kids got to stay up and have POP while I had to go to bed as one of the little kids. And so when I was old enough to stay up and have POP and sit and talk and laugh with my sisters, that's what I associated Diet Pepsi with. So I had this reward value in my brain that, you know, you had a hard morning, stressful work morning, give yourself a Diet Pepsi and you're just gonna feel good. And so that's the reward value I thought I was getting. And then I started paying attention, as Judson Brewer suggests. And what I did was I paid attention to, oh, I've got the craving for my Diet Pepsi. I'm going to walk down to the vending machine and get my Diet Pepsi. And I'm just going to pay attention to how I'm feeling. Okay, I'm anxiously awaiting my Diet Pepsi. I bring it back up to have lunch at my desk with my Diet Pepsi. And I take the first sip and I think, oh boy, this is not going to work. But I thought, I'm going to try it, you know, follow what he said. So I paid attention as I drank it and I enjoyed it and I felt calm and relaxed at that moment while I was drinking it. And then I was a project manager. So after lunch, I would go into meetings that were at least 1 hour, if not 2 hours long. And I would be facilitating the meeting, so I couldn't just jump up and run off to the bathroom. So I would have to go to the bathroom like right before the meeting so that I would hopefully make it through the meeting. And then as soon as the meeting ended, I'd have to run out and go. And half hour into the meeting, I was kind of wiggling my legs and, you know, very uncomfortable and so on. And so I started paying attention to that. And that part was not so nice, was not so good. And so I did that, and I kept doing that. So every day I would do the same thing, pay attention before, during, and after, and see how it was. And about probably 3 weeks later, after I was maybe halfway through with the bottle, and I noticed, you know, this really doesn't taste that great. You know, it's not as good as that first sip I thought was. And so then after a while, I didn't finish the bottle, you know, and this is after having to force myself not to have more than one. And over time, I just quit drinking Diet Pepsi. And because I realized that what the result I was getting was not really a reward, it was the exact opposite. I was not getting connection because I couldn't sit and chat with my colleagues before or after a meeting because I had to go to the bathroom. I was not feeling comfort. I was feeling a lot of discomfort because I had to go to the bathroom. And over time, it just lost my taste for Diet Pepsi. And even 6 months later, I was driving back from Chicago and tired and thought, I've got to stop and get some caffeine. I got a Diet Pepsi, I opened it up, took a sip, and it was just like, ooh, and threw it away. And I have no desire for it whatsoever. Because what I did was I changed the reward value in my brain. And that changed it all. So Judson Brewer says, no matter what you name it, if you want to change it, you have to rub your brain's little orbital frontal cortex nose in its own poop so that it clearly smells how stinky it is. That's how your brain learns. So if we want to change our habits, we have to really stop and look at them and see what's really happening. And he's done this with smokers, and he's done this with alcoholics, and it seems to work. And they're all very surprised when they go in. They expect him to say, don't smoke. And he says, smoke as much as you want, but be mindful while you're smoking. So if there's an unproductive habitual tendency that you have, don't try and use grit to get rid of it. But let's try to really pay attention and use the way our brain really works through its reward system, through its learning system. And we can learn a better habit or a better way to do it. So let's do a reflection. So you want to get into your meditative posture. And think about something that you crave. It could be chocolate, some kind of junk food, could be shopping, alcohol. Maybe you crave admiration or new experiences or attention or excitement. And when you've got the craving in mind, pick any one. Don't let your mind get all caught up in should I do this or that. You can do this one now and that one later. And think about what triggers this craving. What's the signal that comes up that makes this craving come up in my mind? Could be you're feeling stressed. Could be someone pressed a button. Could just be walking in the door of your house. And just spell out in your mind, what is the behavior? When you're craving, what is the behavior that you're actually doing? And what reward is currently in your orbital frontal cortex? What's the reward that you think you get from this behavior, just at first glance? Pleasure, satisfaction, comfort, excitement. And now let's reel in slow motion, go through that craving before, during, and after. So the trigger comes up, and pay attention to what you're feeling in your body when that craving gets triggered. That's your bell of mindfulness. Might be a tightness in the chest, butterflies in the stomach, a restless feeling, whatever it is. That's your bell of mindfulness that this craving is starting. It's important to get familiar with it, because the quicker you do it, the more likely you'll be able to stop before you get on that hamster wheel of reactivity and just go right into your habitual response. And now you're doing the behavior. And what are you feeling in your body right now? What emotions? What bodily sensations? What reward are you getting from this behavior? And now the behavior is completed. And how are you feeling now? Happy that you did what you did? Regretful? Disappointed that it's over and wanting more? What's the feeling directly after you finish the craving behavior? And now it's the next morning. And as you think back on that craving behavior, how do you feel now? And just noticing how that might be different than what you initially thought your reward was. The result was a reward. And now maybe it's not quite so enticing. So at the sound of the bell, we'll end this meditation. So you look at the result and you realize that the result that you thought you were getting may not be exactly the result that you were actually getting, or there may be other results that you were just ignoring. And when you put them into play, it's not quite so positive. And so now what we have to do is tell our orbital frontal cortex what the bigger, better offer is. Because that's how we're going to change the habit. You have to have an offer that's more rewarding, and it doesn't simply substitute a different behavior. I couldn't substitute a chai latte for a Diet Pepsi. That's not how it works. Basically, a lot of times we're craving something because we've got a hole in our heart. And we're looking outside for something to fill that hole. We look to food to cover up our boredom, or to cover up our loneliness, or to cover up our feeling empty, kind of, eh. But nothing outside can really cover those. It can cover those, but it can't heal those. And so we have to look at, what is it that I really need? What do I really need? So my bigger, better offer for my Diet Pepsi was, you are enough. You're perfectly imperfect, you are enough. Because at work, I was stressed out because I had so much to do, because I had to do to be enough. And so what I was really doing with that Diet Pepsi was trying to make myself feel like I was enough. And it maybe felt good while I was drinking it, but it sure didn't feel good afterwards. And it didn't solve the issue that was causing my craving. And so if you look at it really closely, you can see that any external thing can't solve an internal issue that you have. If you're lonely, if you're bored, if you're not feeling good, like you're enough, if you're feeling like you don't belong, if you're feeling like you're not loved, all the outside things in the world are not going to fix that. Even though we think they will. Not even sex will fix that if you're feeling unloved. Because a lot of times sex is the near enemy of intimacy. It looks like intimacy, but it keeps you from being intimate. So we have to really pay attention and figure out what our bigger, better offer is. And sometimes if it's just a little something that's irritating you, the only bigger, better offer you need is your breath. I'm feeling restless, so I need to do something. Well, what I need to do is stop and take 3 long, slow, deep breaths. And that calms my body, and then I don't need to do something. Because if I do something and I'm feeling restless and that's done, guess what? Now I need to do something else and something else, because it doesn't work. But if I take some slow, deep breaths, especially extending the exhale, I can calm my body. And then when I calm my body, I can see there's all of this beauty in the world that I can enjoy. I don't have to go rushing after things to make me feel better. I can be just like you were in the meditation this morning, just sitting here being okay. So instead of trying to use brute force to change a habitual response, you can use the reward-based learning that our brains were designed for. Whether your habit's eating, being anxious, being angry, because anger is a habit. It's an emotion, but it's also a habit. Being busy, drinking, procrastinating, whatever the habit, the behavior, your brain keeps doing it because it thinks it's getting rewarded. And until it learns that it's not getting rewarded for that behavior, it's going to keep doing it over and over. And every time it does, you strengthen that neural pathway. So we have to clearly see the habit, pay attention to what the results of that behavior actually give us, and update our orbital frontal cortex with the new reward value. So as we're trying to live our authentic lives, we're going to fail many times. We're going to step back into these unproductive habitual tendencies that we have all of the time. But if we want to be authentic, we have to keep making those course corrections. We have to keep beginning again. We have to pay attention both to the direction we're going and the speed we're trying to go at. By listening to our bodies and slowing ourselves down, we'll see when and where we're veering off course. But if we're going 100 miles an hour, we can't see that we're veering off course. And then we get way off course. And it makes it even harder to get back on. So the more we practice being in the present moment, the more we practice seeing below our thoughts or our perceptions to what's really happening, the more resilient and authentic that we'll become.